Blog Talk Radio.
Delay, folks. We had some technical difficulties, and we're going to put Tony Torre. Now we've got Teddy Atlas on the show.
Hello?
Tony!
Hey, what's up?
Sorry about the lateness. We had some major technical difficulties, so we're just getting live right now. So I introduced myself. Now.
That's okay. You're not the only one, man.
Well, now it's your turn to introduce yourself, and then we'll get into the show.
Well, you all know who I am. Well, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm the leader, man, icon. You know, well-known guy in this business, the Tornado, Tony Pennekow.
Also known as the Boxing Rain Man. And we have a very special guest on tonight. There's some good news and bad news. The good news is we finally tracked down Teddy Atlas.
Really?
Can you guess what the bad news is?
He's not going to do our show?
No, the bad news is you can't ask him a single question.
Why not?
Because you're on question probation. That's it. We can't allow you to ask any more boxing questions.
Question probation? I've never heard of that.
No, I'm just kidding. The reason is because we had to pre-record it. He's always traveling during these Friday night fight weeks, of course. So he had a tough time doing it on a Thursday night, and plus it was just such a back and forth with him trying to connect with me that we ended up having to do it yesterday, live on the spot. I didn't even have questions prepared. I had to contact him through his foundation, and then we finally got on the phone with him. He said, geez, I thought for a minute there we were going to have to help you out with my foundation. You were homeless because you're never home. But, it's pretty interesting. Conversation we had with him, but even though you won't get to ask him a question, maybe you could fill in one of the answers he failed to give, because being the boxing brain man that you are, you must know. How did Teddy get into boxing in the first place? Do you know that?
That is a very good question, and I'm trying to think, you know, what would be a good reasoning for him to get into boxing. I know, many of the standard answers you get is, you know, maybe someone who's not good in any other sports that, you know, wanted to involve something in athletics ability, would get into boxing. Somebody that had a problem with anger control and trying to, you know, keep themselves out of trouble, a la one of his proteges, Mike Tyson, that was a good release for him. I'm trying to think what else would be a good reason. Felt like beating somebody up. I don't know. He didn't answer it. Unfortunately, I can't either.
It was kind of interesting because I didn't really know. And his reasoning for not answering was everybody knows. You know, it's out there. It's been reported. But he had a little bit of a troubled youth. He was in and out of trouble with the law. He'd been arrested a bunch of times. And he got in a street fight. That's how he had the scar on his face.
Yeah, it was a broken bottle, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. I think it was a knife. Yeah, well, at least according to Wikipedia, it was a knife. And the wound took 400 stitches to close. And so he still has that scar today. You can see it. Still,
it's very prominent.
But anyway, he had a short career with amateur boxing, and that's how he met Customato. And I briefly talked about Mike Tyson, because I didn't really know the full story behind those two, but now that I read it in the Wikipedia, I'm kind of glad I didn't ask him too much about Tyson, because apparently at one point he held a gun to Tyson's head because of...
Yeah, I knew that.
Some kind of interaction with his sister that he didn't like, or his relative. At one point I compared Mike Tyson to Floyd Mayweather, and Teddy really likes Floyd, so I don't think he but you'll hear it in the second hour. It's about a 45-minute interview. And one thing about Teddy is that, you know, you give him a question, he's going to go on about 10 minutes sometimes. So I just kind of let him talk and let him go with it. So I only got about maybe 10 questions in the whole 45 minutes. And he did well answering them. He went on and on a little bit, but, you know, they were good answers. So I was more than happy to sit back and let him go with it. But that's going to start around 9:15 or so Eastern. We have a ton of news, which is partially the reason why we had technical difficulties getting the show started. I think I had about 900 windows open at once with all these little news reports that I wanted to talk about tonight. So that probably helped weigh things down a little bit, get us in trouble. But of course, the Manny Pacquiao versus Shane Mosley fight, want to get that out of the way. It was very one-sided.
Shane wanted to get it out of the way, too.
Yeah, Teddy actually said only one guy showed up.
Yeah. Well, here's what, I mean, and I'm not going to say funny. That's not the right word to use. I did not see the fight. I was at a baseball game that night. And after it was over, I had turned to a few people that I knew after the results came out. I said, and why did I have to see the fight again? I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you called this one right, man. You called this one right. I'm like, first of all, can you name the last one I called wrong? And I said, ooh, talking trash again. I can't help it. All right, the last one I called wrong was probably Pacquiao De La Hoya. I picked De La Hoya to win in a wipeout. But with this fight, I, you know, you get a feeling in a fight if you're watching guys a certain time. I've seen Manny Pacquiao no less than 20 times. I've seen Sugar Shane Mosley no less than probably pretty much every fight. You know, since he became a title contender back in the later stages of the 90s. So I feel that I know their styles pretty well, and I know where they are at this stage of their careers. And Shane, as I said in my article, is a type of fighter that once, when Shane was undefeated and he had never really been hurt in a fight before, and he was almost like he was invincible, yeah, he had no problem, you know, letting his hands go. That first fight with De La Hoya, yeah, it was a nip and tuck fight. And Shane pulled it through in the last two rounds and won. When he lost that first fight to Vernon Forrest, it was the first time he ever got knocked down, and he was hurt bad. And not just was he hurt in the second round, he got hurt again in, like, the 10th. And Forrest really hurt him with some body shots in there. And it was like the first time, you know, I was surprised he made the distance. I mean, he was hurt, he was stunned, he was beat up. Fought that rematch with Forrest, and he was tentative. Then he had that second fight with De La Hoya, and he was tentative again. I thought he lost that fight. You know, and then when the fight with Mayweather, the fight with Winky Wright, you know, Winky gives a lot of movement. He's a big physical guy. He's got a tight defense. And the first fight, Shane, once again, got beat up. And the second fight, he did better, but he was too tentative. I'm like, you know what? I don't think he's got it anymore. You know, and he had some, you know, close fights here and there, and, you know, some wins and, you know, some close losses, like Miguel Cotto. But then he was fighting Mayweather, and he had a great showing against Margarito, and I'm like, you know what, maybe he's got something left. And maybe, you know, with Nazeem Richardson in his corner, maybe Nazeem has got him off of that being tentative anymore. Maybe that change in, trainers has helped him out. And starting in that third round against Mayweather, when he just looked so tight and so tentative and so unsure of himself, and he just took a beating in there. I'm like, you know what? He's got that, again, where he's so tentative when he fights somebody with superior skills and superior speed. And I said, it's going to be the same thing when he fights Pacquiao. Pacquiao is going to be too aggressive. He's going to be too fast. He's going to have Shane on his heels. And Shane is, you know, he's going to try to survive. That's what's going to happen. And as, when I got home from the baseball game, it was about the eighth round, and I went on the online tracker, and I saw where Manny had dropped him in the third, had him pretty stunned. And then, like, even the round that Shane was credited for knockdown, they said it was still so one-sided that most judges couldn't even give him the round. And it wasn't a knockdown, from what I heard. It was a push and a trip.
Yeah.
So now I got a couple guys that, I mean, they adore Mayweather so much, and they hate Pacquiao so much. I could say Pacquiao was going to fight, a third grader. Oh, Pacquiao's going to get his ass knocked out. I'm calling it right here. The third grader is going to knock him the hell out in six rounds or whatever. Then Pacquiao wins. Oh, he's on steroids. Oh, the fight was fixed. Or this guy's like, Mosley, the fight was fixed. You know, Bob Arum paid Mosley, to, you know, just retreat. Well, you know what? There's going to, you know, fight fixing in the past. Very rarely do you see a person taking a dive, just stand there and take punishment.
Right.
If I'm going to take a dive, you know, like I remember people tried to say Michael Moore took a dive against George Foreman, you know? And I'm like, well, why would he wait 10 rounds and beat the living shit out of the guy that the guy was a bloody, swollen wreck until he got knocked out, right? I'm like, no, if Moore's going to throw that fight, he's going to do it in two or three rounds. He's barely going to even hit Foreman, and he's the first time he gets hit with a close punch, he's going to go down. I said, Ali List in the second fight? Yeah, I could see that being a thrown fight because, you know, it was just so overdramatic with the theatrics. Foreman Liston, or Foreman Moore, no. People saying Mike Tyson threw the fight to Buster Douglas. I laughed in their face. I said, yeah, I would stand there and just, you know, get pounded for 10 rounds, my eyes swollen shut. No, Tyson was going to throw that fight to Douglas. He would have went down in two rounds.
Yeah, actually, the place I'm staying at here, the guy that watched it as well said that, hey, it looked to me like he was throwing the fight, you know, but that's just because Manny's that good, I think. Now it just,
yeah,
he just outpaced him, outworked him, and out-hustled him, really.
And he intimidated him. Uh-huh. Let's look at that, too.
After that fight, Nick Mosley had said that he'd never encountered anybody in his whole career that was that fast and powerful. And that's one of the things that I've always mentioned as Manny's number one skill is he just has that blend of speed and power that nobody else in boxing has right now.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what carried him to the victory there. Unfortunately, we still have the situation with the, legal issues with the defamation lawsuit with Floyd Sr. and Jr. as defendants. That's not going away anytime soon. And it's going to probably tie things up for a while as far as if these two are ever going to fight. But one thing, not to ruin too much of the anticipation for Teddy's interview here, but one thing that Teddy mentioned was that Floyd has a lot of lawyers because of all these situations he's been involved in. And, you know, there's a lot of things coming out now with the security guards on Floyd's compound gated community out there in Vegas here, I should say here, basically saying that not only did he poke this one security guard in the face that he's possibly facing criminal charges for, in addition to a situation with his ex-wife or girlfriend or whatever she is, but he also apparently threatens to get some of his friends who have guns after these guys for these parking issues. So it's going to be a rough year for Floyd, maybe rough couple years, depending on what happens with all this stuff. And Teddy thinks that because of all this and because of all the lawyers, that Floyd is just going to have to fight at some point just to pay for all this.
Yeah, well, you know what I heard? I heard that they were talking about a fight with Victor Ortiz, who was fresh off his win over Andre Berto a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's obviously not official. I've heard two trains of thought. I heard first train of thought saying, September 17th, Mayweather Ortiz. And then the second train of thought I heard was that might fall through. So now they're looking at a possible fight to Pacquiao, either a third fight with Juan Manuel Marquez or a fight with Victor Ortiz in November. Obviously, neither of those are set in stone yet. But, you know, hey, Victor Ortiz won a lot of respect from me, you know, with that fight with Andre Bertel. But I went to my dad, and I said, Dad, Victor Ortiz, he fought pretty good in that last fight. Yeah? I said, so, what chances did you give him against Floyd Mayweather? And I said to myself, Mom.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I said it last week. Marquez will probably be the next fight for May because I think the dynamic is there. Marquez has looked good in recent fights. He's more energetic and experienced than he was the last time those two fought. And I think that'll be the best possible fight for him other than Floyd. But we'll definitely see. One thing I noticed on the other side of things, in mixed martial arts, everybody seems to be pulling out of these main event fights now with injuries. The injury bug's going around, especially in the UFC. We have a situation with, just now, Brock Lesnar has pulled out of UFC 131, and he's not going to be fighting Junior Dos Santos now. He's got the diverticulitis bothering him again. And just the new opponent for Dos Santos is going to be Shane Carwin. And basically, Lesnar said he's been feeling sick for 3 months. He's been on antibiotics, and it didn't allow him to train to his full capabilities. And he went back to the doctor this week. He spent 14 hours talking to doctors at the Mayo Clinic this week.
Wow.
They said that the illness will not end his career, but and he won't retire from MMA. But there's just no way that he can fight in June. So who knows what's going to happen with that. It doesn't sound good for Brock Lesnar. Also, the two guys in the main event for the UFC at the end of this month pulled out, Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard, with injuries. So it's kind of interesting that the UFC came out this week with a story, or the news media came out with a story that the UFC is now going to insure 300 of their fighters, both Strikeforce and UFC guys, with like an accident insurance policy type of deal, where now that they can get covered not only for fights in the cage, but also for situations that arise in training. And it does fall short of the full coverage you'd like these guys to have if they're going to make a career out of this, you know. They ought to have full insurance coverage for anything that happens, whether it's sickness or accident. But it's a step in the right direction, and I think it's Dana White and the Fertitta's way of avoiding the union card, you know, which should be probably coming within the next few years if the pay doesn't improve for these guys. And, of course, we keep talking about the Nick Diaz coming over to boxing story. Which is gaining a lot of legs. There's talk now about making George St. Pierre Diaz's next opponent, and if that happens, they may back out of this boxing fight, which apparently only Lacey has signed it. There's no indication that Diaz has signed or verbally agreed, although it's possible that he has. But we'll see about that. I think it's going to happen either way. There's a lot of talk that Jeff Lacy really isn't a world beater and hasn't been for a while, and has some physical problems that he's had in the past that might be a problem this time out. So it's not really that much of a test for Diaz either way.
No, I don't think it is at all, to be honest.
But it is still an MMA versus boxing situation, which is going to call attention to, number one, you know, which sport is better, that debate, and which sport pays more and treats the fighter better. So we're going to have that debate circulating because of that. And I think Dana White was going to try to avoid that at all costs by signing Diaz up to fight DSP. The other thing going on is there's a big fighter summit now. This is actually going on today. I think they're finishing up today here in Vegas at the Red Rock Casino. And if I wasn't banned from contacting UFC fighters because of my lawsuit, I might be over there trying to get some interviews. But, hey, what can you do? Anyway, yeah, that's going on this week. And I just read today that during that, Matt Mitrione and Tito Ortiz almost got into a fight, unscripted and unpaid for. during this summit because, of course, as many of us know, Tito Ortiz's wife is none other than Jenna Jameson, who has some experience in the pornography industry, although she's apparently retired from the adult entertainment industry in 2008. And but anyway, Matt Mitrione is the guy from the Ultimate Fighter Heavyweights who took out Kimbo Slice in the finale, and just has looked better and better ever since. And he's one of those guys that's kind of like Roy Country Nelson. You know, he's a little fat around the middle, but he can still fight. And he appeals to a lot of people because he's like an everyday-looking guy. He's a little bit tapped in the head. He talks crazy sometimes. But basically, Mitrione appeared on the MMA Hour in March, and he suggested that Tito Ortiz is going to pull out of his fight UFC 132 against Ryan Bader and have his girlfriend step in for him. And his exact words were, "We all know that Tito is going to give some type of excuse and back out, so Jenna's going to have to step in and fight Bader for Tito's honor. But Bader, be really careful because this is a trap fight. We all know that she's awesome off her back and she's got phenomenal top control. But remember that she doesn't choke easily." So, of course, that upset Ortiz, and they didn't even have a fight, but they had like a back-and-forth argument deal. And Mitrione was in fighting stance, and Tito's just standing there looking at him like, "You gotta be kidding me." And of course, none other than Roy Nelson, who I just mentioned, was there with a video camera to catch the action. And, of course, there was enough people around to prevent the fight from happening. But it was one of those interesting stories across the wires today that I thought was worth mentioning. Another real big story that's been on TMZ. We all know about the clothing company Tapa that's been around since the UFC started, maybe even before then, who knows. But I think I first saw it in a felony fight tape that I watched years ago. Somebody was wearing the tap-out shorts. But anyway, one of the founders, the guy that was probably the main force behind the company to begin with, was a guy named Charles Mask Lewis. And he got killed by a drunk driver back in 2009. There was a situation where they were doing some drag racing on the streets. And I think he had a Ferrari or something, crashed into a pole, almost killed his passenger, killed him. And what happened was he was cremated. And this is just one of those stories that it proves that fact is stranger than fiction. His sister Carla had him cremated, and she had executive power over his remains. After his death, she got approached by the co-founders, the other two guys who like to walk around looking like Halloween costume type dudes. Skyscrape and Punkass is the nicknames they go by. And they wanted to borrow Mask's remains and his urn for a public memorial service. So Carla, the sister, agreed, and she demanded that they return the remains immediately following the service. Now, this is where it gets pretty messed up. Carla arrived at the service, and she noticed various booths and tables set up around the cathedral where they had it, and one had a large shoebox, and there were several miniature vials in the shoebox and on display. And the vendor told her each of the vials had a small amount of the cremated remains of Mask and were reserved for and to be given to, quote, special people whose names were on a printed list. And she believes that somewhere between 50 to 100 vials were either sold, given away, donated, or otherwise distributed to several unknown people. And she claims Tapout still has possession of the urn and the remainder of Mask's ashes, and the company refuses to return them. So, of course, she filed a lawsuit, and that's going to be one of the most interesting legal cases I think we'll ever see in mixed martial arts. That's just too crazy. I mean, giving away the guy's ashes. I mean, you talk about taking advantage of somebody's death. that takes the cake. Another story making the rounds is the UFC has been criticized by a major industry professional for the drug testing policies. And something that came through on this story that I had never heard before caught my eye. And it was that the UFC in some situations are put in charge of their own testing. You know, so there's no, in certain venues, there's no government oversight whatsoever. So they decide whether guys get tested at all. And there's an interesting article on this over at bloodyelbow.com if you want to know the full specifics, but this is a great story. I thought it was interesting. I would doubt a lot of people knew that aspect of the testing and how they could abuse it. I mean, if you consider a guy like Vince McMahon over in the WWE has been known to look the other way on steroids if it helps his guys look better, and you know, it's not not obviously affecting the outcomes if they're all planned, so doesn't seem like a big deal to him, and it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to believe that Dana White and the Fertittas would feel the same way, even though it would have an outcome or an impact on the outcome in an MMA fight more so than a wrestling match. But if they have an opportunity where they don't have to test anybody, and some of these fighters know they're going into an event where the UFC doesn't have to test anybody, chances are they're probably not going to test anybody. And they're going to get away with taking steroids on both sides of the fight sometimes, which is what we saw back when Sean Sherk and Hermes Franca both tested positive, even though we've had Sherk on the show and he's still completely denying that he took anything. Another fighter story making the rounds is the last week at the big Bellator event, we had a guy who proposed to his girlfriend after the fight, after knocking out Joe Riggs. And his girlfriend, Megan Vargas, came into the cage and he proposed to her. Now, I heard the story and I saw the video and I thought, well, this is a great story, you know, a real happy story. And turned out I only knew half the story, because the other half of the story is that this is a guy who has not only recovered from cancer, but while he was dealing with leukemia and the side effects of the drugs and everything like that, he had three fights, two of which he won. So just an incredible story overall. He knew all these fights that he really only had one good round going in because of his situation where something like 94% of his white blood cells were affected with this myelogenous leukemia. He found out in April 2010 that he had it, and he had two fights and finished the first one in 2 minutes and 43 seconds. And the next one in 2 minutes and 29 seconds. So he knew he did have just a limited amount of time, and he took this guy out. And then in his third fight, he went against a guy in the finals of a tournament and lost by a shot to the liver. But other than that, I mean, even losing, knowing you got that situation to deal with, that's a lot of guts and courage. And, nobody knew at the time. He didn't tell anybody that he had this situation. So that's even more incredible, I think. So check out that story, Brian Baker, Brian with a Y, if you want a good read and good story to relate to the mixed martial arts business there. In boxing news, a couple of interesting stories. We had Tony Tubbs making the news because he's going to come back to boxing at the age of 54.
What was his name again?
Tony Tubbs.
Oh, my God.
He's coming back for a 4-round fight, and he's going to be the oldest active boxer in the world when he comes back. And he's his story came out because of Mother's Day. Basically, his mother stood by him when he had some issues with crack cocaine, regular cocaine, just dealing with the publicity and the fame from when he was a world champion. And his mother has been at every fight that he's ever had. And now he doesn't actually look that old, you know. He looks, he doesn't have gray hair. He's not slow. He seems to be all right with the comeback. I saw him throwing some punches in the ring in the video that they had on the story for Mother's Day. But he is definitely, you know, he's got the beer belly going for him. And
he's going in his prime.
Yeah, he was always a little bit chubby. Probably how he got the, you know, his last name being Tubbs is kind of appropriate to have a little bit of tubbiness. But he's coming back. Doesn't look like he's gonna, you know, make another run for the title like Holyfield is still trying to do. By the way, he won also this past weekend. And now Tank Williams is asking for his rematch. That was one of the big fights that Holyfield was involved in that was on the way to this title.
Tank Williams, yeah.
And there was
on a clash of heads.
Right, and they ruled it was unintentional. It was a no contest. So now Tank Williams is playing his rematch card. He wants to fight Holyfield next. So we'll see what happens there. And trying to see what else we have for boxing news.
Well, we got the big Hopkins fight this weekend.
That's true. No, I didn't get to get up early enough to get on that conference call.
I wish I could have been on it. That's right, I forgot you're on a 3-hour time difference. I was going to write a preview for this fight. Unfortunately, I did not. Well, I still got time. Joe, what am I thinking? The fight's not this weekend. It's next weekend. Well, shit, then I'm going to do my preview next weekend.
All right.
Or next week's show, I should say.
And George Foreman is actually, I did read a lot of the comments that he made in the call, and I guess he's actually convinced that Hopkins is going to have to knock him out.
I'm convinced of that too, honestly, Rich. The last fight, if you gave Pascal the first three rounds, he was up by 5 points, okay? And just say you were generous and gave him the fourth round was very close. Just say you were generous and gave him the fourth round. Now he's up by 6 points, okay? Hopkins won rounds 5 through 12 convincingly. And that right there is 8 points.
Right.
Hopkins won that fight by 2 points. And the one round that he got knocked down in should not have been a 10-8 round because Hopkins was winning the round. At best, you'd give that 10-9.
Mm-hmm.
I had Hopkins win that fight by 3 points.
Right. Yeah, it should be interesting. I think Hopkins is definitely going to have to put more emphasis on his punches and be more active.
He was active. He didn't really give away some rounds. Trying to conserve energy or use movement and keep a slow pace. He's moved in the last fight, and this has been one of Pascal's Achilles' heels. If you go back to his fight with Carl Froch that he lost, he was starting to, run out of gas. Or he was running out of gas. If you go back to, you watch his fight with Chad Dawson, he dominated early, but then Dawson was coming on strong late. And the clash of heads actually saved Pascal. And I think, we're in the same boat here with Hopkins. He won the first, say, four rounds, but from then on, he was getting stuffed. Hopkins used a good body attack, really wore him down, and at the end of that, Pascal had nothing left.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. It should be a good fight. overall. Let's see, what else do we have? We had a good episode of The Ultimate Fighter last night. A guy from Massachusetts had his redemption. He got a second shot. They picked him for the wild card fight. And he faced a guy that had a pretty good style for his fighting strategy. And he ended up getting what they call a darce choke, which to me I thought was more what they call an arm triangle. But I don't know, they have all these different names for these chokes. But it was a good fight, and you know, there was a little bit of controversy. I thought actually Brock was going to have to fight before the main event fight that just got canceled, because one of his little guys there on his team was talking about, I don't care how many, you know, if he's a coach or not, and how many pounds he's got on me, I want to fight him. And criticized him openly for having less fights than half the guy he's coaching. Well, probably more than half. Almost all of them, I would think, had more fights than Brock. But they didn't come to blows. They just had a little falling out where the guy, Len Bentley is his name, he was pissed that he didn't get picked for the wild card spot. And Brock's excuse was he had a bad knee. You know, the kid got injured, just something that seems to be going around everywhere now. Even the Ultimate Fighter guys are getting injured, not just the main events, already established UFC fighters. So that was kind of interesting. It's a good episode to watch. And next week, I think we're going to have two big fights at least. For the next round of the show. So keep your eye out for that. Had a chance, fortunately I didn't take up the promoters on the Super 6 show that they had. They had a press conference over at the MGM this weekend for the Super 6 fighters. I think that's coming up this weekend. Arthur Abraham versus Andre Ward. Don't quote me on that, though. Yes, it is going to be this weekend. So that's the fight to watch out for. Here's a little boxing gossip news. Vladimir Klitschko is apparently now girlfriendless. He had a big, there's a big story going around. A lot of people have been following these two as a couple. Hayden Panettiere, who's she's a Hollywood actress.
Yeah, I heard that.
And I just read today now that they're breaking up.
Really?
Boo-hoo. another story, sort of interesting. Amateur boxing coaches are humiliated by the fact that Freddie Roach is being brought in to help with the training of these fighters. And I haven't got a chance to actually read the article yet, but that's in one of the boxing links we get up on the blog. If you want to check that out. My computer.
Well, here's the thing, Rich. I mean, you watch a lot of sports, right?
Right.
What names of sports you like to watch?
Well, of course, football.
I'm talking about team sports.
Team sports, right. Football, of course.
Okay.
One of my favorites, and we have a football boxing story, too, coming up. Hockey, I probably put last on the list, but I've been watching that lately just because the Bruins are in it. Sorry about the Flyers, by the way.
Okay, keep going.
Basketball, I only watch in the playoffs, and I'm glad that I didn't get to watch the rest of the game yesterday because it's...
Well, and I'm also going to say baseball because I hung out with you at a Red Sox game.
Yeah,
okay.
Baseball.
So here, let's put this into perspective. Okay, you're a Red Sox fan. You're a Boston guy. You're a Red Sox fan.
He went 86 years without a championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you got, you know, a manager out there and he ain't getting it done, what's going to happen?
You're going to want to bring in somebody new.
I'm going to get what I used to say in my old company. I used to have the one manager and I were pretty good friends, and we would use code words where somebody was going to get fired, and our code word was pancakes. So I'm like, oh, you got any pancakes coming out? Yeah, Joe Smith's getting pancakes. Oh, okay. So I would know. So you look at it this way. In the Olympics back a couple of years ago, the U.S. team was dreadful. Dreadful. Now, one thing you got to understand, like a lot of these other countries, they build their amateur team up a couple of years prior to the Olympics. You know, a lot of the U.S. fighters, I'm going to take a good example of the guy we had on the show, Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia was an Olympic hopeful, had a lot of potential to win the gold medal. And what ended up happening is he got upset on a fluke decision, you know, in the trials, and now he's out. He's like, well, you know what, I could be an alternate in case, you know, whoever breaks his hand, like in the 64 Olympics, when the little guy broke his hand and Frazier went in his place and won the gold medal. Or, you know, what the hell of it, I'm going to sign the contract with Golden Boy Promotions right now, start my pro career. The hell with this amateur shit anymore. That's one thing. So now you got these guys, like, a lot of them are like, you know, the Olympics are not as valued in the United States as they used to be. Back in the day, like I said, I would know the entire U.S. Olympic team. Ring Magazine would have a huge article on a profile of every U.S. fighter, their chances, and who their competition was. You don't have anymore. So a lot of these guys are like, you know what, if I don't make it in the Olympics, I'm just going to start my pro career, get my pedigree, and start making some money. You know, a lot of promoters now are not throwing out the big dollars to the guys that are the Olympians. So, but it still makes it hard on the Olympic coach because he's trying to build this team up from the ground up. These guys are all being brought in, so they're not even coming like a team like these other countries. These guys are like a brotherhood for years. Not like that for the U.S. These guys are... A lot of them come out of pro-style gyms, and now they're trying to fight this goofy amateur style. So that's why I think, you know, it wasn't getting done. So they got to bring in a new philosophy and see if that works. I mean, they might be using a run-first offense, and it's not working. So now we're going to bring in, you know, a pass-happy coach and a, you know, a guy that stresses a blitzing defense. See how it works. It can't get any worse. But until they really change the scoring, it's still Olympic boxing is never going to be what it was back in the 70s and 80s and before that in the 60s. But hey, you got to shake something up because the formula right now ain't working. I mean, let's look at this, how ridiculous the scoring can be. Okay. Let's go back, to a team. I can't believe it's been this long now, 15 years. Do you remember the U.S. Olympic team from 1996?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of the names on that team. They won one gold medal and a couple bronze. I don't think they even had any silver, but I could be wrong. The gold medalist was David Reed out of Philadelphia. David had a short professional career. He won a world title and then lost the fight to Felix Trinidad and never recovered from it. Well, let's look at some of the names that guys that some of them didn't even medal, and some of them took like bronze medals. You ever hear of Antonio Tarver?
Oh yeah,
Tarver was a bronze medalist. He lost to Vasily Girov. Girov, a good fighter, but Tarver could have won that fight. But it was the scoring system had him kind of screwed up. Fernando Vargas, you ever hear of him? As you know, fought Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad, Shane Mosley, fought a lot of good fighters. I don't even remember if he medaled. Zahir Rahim, very good fighter out of Philadelphia, has a win over Eric Morales in his pro career. I don't even think he medaled. Who was another guy at the he was out of Jersey, but he trained out of Philadelphia. Terrence Coffin, who had a couple like USBA titles, you know, fought some pretty good fighters. He may have gotten a bronze medal. I don't remember. What about a guy who I criticize often, but I'm not knocking his talent whatsoever? What about a guy like Floyd Mayweather, who basically walked out of there with the bronze medal?
Yeah.
Doesn't that tell you something right there that something might be a little bit wrong with that system?
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Well, another boxing story that I'm sure that you'll be interested in, since it's about a guy I think you'll probably love to hate if you don't already hate him. Donovan McNabb. Do you like that guy?
I never had a problem with Donovan McNabb.
Really? Well, apparently your boy, Bernard Hopkins, does have a problem with him. He said he's not enough.
No.
Did you read about this?
They had a big article in the one Philadelphia paper yesterday. I was reading it.
He's got a suntan, that's all.
Yeah.
About
apparently, Donovan McNabb is not black. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like, that's weird to hear, hear guys that are the same race, you know, slamming each other like that. Well, I guess it's not each other. It's just Hopkins slamming McNabb for some reason. Basically, he's talking about the distaste McNabb had when he was traded by the Eagles to the Redskins last summer. And Hopkins said, why do you think McNabb felt he was betrayed? Because McNabb is the guy in the house while everybody else is on the field. He's the one who got the extra coat, the extra servings. You're our boy, Hopkins told the Philadelphia Daily News. He thought he was one of them. I don't know what brought that all on, but apparently he's got a beef.
And I love the guy. I've loved him. You know, he's one of my favorite fighters ever, to be honest. But there are times you listen to Brody and Saint Bernard, please shut up. You know, I've met Bernard Hopkins. He's actually a really nice guy. He's good with the fans, you know, he cares about his fans. But sometimes he'll say something like, dude, shut up. Making yourself look bad.
So another couple stories in boxing movies. We got a few minutes here, like about 3 minutes before we're going to start this Teddy Atlas interview, and then we'll just play that and the show will be over when that's over, so you can sign off at that point. But I just wanted to touch on these two new boxing movies that are coming out. One of them is a robot boxing movie called Real Steel, and it's starring Hugh Jackman. And he is forced to retire early as the sport starts to become dominated by giant robots. I don't know what year this is supposed to be, but preview that they've already got put together for it. And it looks kind of interesting, you know. I don't know whether it's going to be the next Transformer or whatever, if it's going to be that big, but it's definitely kind of a funny premise. And the guy that plays the young Luke Skywalker, isn't it? So maybe he'll bring some star power to it. But the better movie coming out is a movie that's going to mimic the true story of the Bayonne Bleeder, Chuck Wepner, who supposedly is what inspired the Rocky movies. Although
was that the mimic movie about him back in 76 and called it Rocky?
Right. Basically, the story is that Sylvester Stallone saw that fight with Muhammad Ali and Chuck Wepner, and that gave him the idea to start writing Rocky. But, you know, there's a lot of differing opinions as to whether Wepner is actually the character Rocky is based on, you know, throughout the movies. I think it's just, he watched that fight, he just got the idea to do the boxing movie loosely based on that sort of situation, but I doubt a lot of the characteristics of Rocky actually came from Wepner himself. So this true story will actually tell more of Wepner's personal story. So we'll check that out. Lee Schreiber looks like he's going to be playing Wepner.
already been in my movie, The Hurricanes, but he was like a supporting role in Box. So, be interesting to check that out. And that's about it for all our news. If you want to check out what's coming up in the MMA and boxing schedule, you can either go to boxrec.com for the boxing, and you might win a $1,000 Walmart gift card, as we often do when we go there. Or you can go to SureDog.com and check out all the MMA upcoming fights. And next week we'll be talking to another couple guests. We'll try to get two guests on for next week, and we'll keep everybody posted as to who they're going to be. And go check out the blog. That's UnlimitedFightNews.com/WordPress. And, of course, don't forget to visit our sponsors, DrinkCocaine.com and ZionceShop.com. Not Zionce.com. Don't go there. ZionceShop.com. Those are the guys we support. So other than that, that's all I got for this week. We're going to go right into the Teddy Atlas interview from yesterday. And we'll post the
I'll put the interview on. I'm going to sign out at this point. I've had something go on the last few days. Some of my friends are trying to get a hold of me tonight regarding some, I hate to say this, funeral arrangements for a friend. So I'm going to sign off and take some of these other calls.
Okay. Well, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Always, like, I'm the Iron Man. I can't lose that status. All right. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right. Good luck. All right. So, can you tell us a little bit about what you thought about the Manny Pacquiao versus Shane Mosley fight?
I thought only one guy showed up, and I thought that we got what we should have expected. You know, from the beginning, from Bobo and Conway was selling a name. You know, they were trying to sell it under the guise of a competitive fight, but, you know, you're supposed to pick for yourself. And a 39-year-old guy, close to 40, that didn't look good at all his last two fights, he didn't figure that he would be competitive with one of the better talents in boxing today. You know, he hadn't been, as they said, he had not looked good at all in his last two fights. He looked terrible in the Mayweather fight. We tried to excuse it by saying that Mayweather is a defensive genius, and he is, but still, there wasn't a consistent effort. And he, you know, Herb and his people did what they did, and they do what they do, which you can't blame them for. They're going out there and they're selling an event. They're trying to make their priority is two things: protect that, you know, keep them winning, put them in with the, you know, the least dangerous opponent at the best payoff possible. You know, financially, make what they're doing successful, make money, at the same time, protect the goose that lays their own eggs, the cash cow. And they were able to do it by doing a good PR job of acquiring a name and selling that name and making you forget about what that name had become. that close to a fight, you have people say, well, Shane Mosley, you know, with his great background and his great experience and his great championship character, you know, he's going to have a chance to do this. He's going to have a chance to counterpunch. He's going to have a chance to be the bigger guy. He's going to have a chance to catch, to land the right hand. Well, you don't have a chance to do any of those things. If you're not physically and mentally prepared to go into a fight and compete, and it didn't look like he was prepared to do that.
And what do you think about the chances of the Pacquiao versus Mayweather fight that everybody's been talking about?
Well, I think that Pacquiao and Mayweather is more probable on the Mayweather side now than ever before, because Mayweather's having legal problems. He's having personal problems. And attached to those legal personal problems are people called lawyers. And lawyers cost money. They charge fees. And you need money to take care of those fees. And Floyd's going to need money. He's going to need to come back. He's going to need to compete. That's what he does. That's how he makes money. And I would be shocked if you didn't hear the impending fight, very, you know, coming up. And you know, that's going to be in the future very soon for Floyd. And I think that there will be a chance to make that fight. You know, it's the biggest fight out there right now. It's the only viable, really, from a standpoint of being viable. Obviously, Mosley was viable, from a financial standpoint, being able to sell what they sold. But in a way, viable to really have a competitive match, he's one of the only guys there right now. I mean, I'm taking nothing away from Pacquiao, but he has four hands selected guys that one way or the other were perfectly positioned for him to dominate, were damaged, were flawed. The only was shot. He was dead in the weight. He was gone. He was done. He never won big fights to begin with, but he was well past his better days, or close to good days. And Clyde didn't come to fight. He didn't hit anything. Ricky Hatton couldn't fight. He was wide open. He couldn't punch. He put his hands back before he threw at you and gave a quick-handed guy a chance to beat him to the mark. And he beat him to the mark. You know, Cogo was damaged good, psychologically and physically. He was wrecked after that Margarito fight. Margarito was dead in the weight. You know, he was a cool guy, a slow guy, a guy that, you know, doesn't have great skills, but he's a game guy with a great chin. But to take the weight, he softened and sapped a lot of his strength. So everybody's been perfectly, you know, positioned in a handicapped way where, you know, Pacquiao can shine. And I'm taking nothing away from Pacquiao. He shines because he has great skills. But these fights that have made him such an icon, that have made him, you know, such a enormous figure in the sport of boxing. I've been guys that have, matched up perfectly because of the reason that you said. So we would like to, before you can start anointing him, the things that people have a tendency to anoint somebody who's around during their time and who's doing some pretty good work, before you anoint him the greatest of this world and all the other planets that might have boxing on it, you should give him a chance to fight somebody that is physically viable.
Right. Now, being a guy who's dealt with people in the past as a trainer like Mike Tyson, who's had legal troubles and all that, what do you think about Floyd's current situation? How does he get out of it and get back?
That's Floyd's personal life. I'm not getting into Floyd's personal life. You know, that's something he's going to have to deal with. That's something that he got into, he's going to get out of. I have no life, Floyd. I am not one of these people that wants to, bash him at every moment. We all make mistakes. That's his personal situation. And that's got a lot to do with many, many years But as far as an athlete, you know, he is a guy that you would like to see a little bit of a litmus test against the greatness of Pacquiao, what we call the greatness of Pacquiao. He would be a good barometer, a good litmus test to see, you know, the evaluation that we have of and the level of adoration that we seem to have for Pacquiao, whether or not it's merited, and to what extent it is merited, or maybe to what extent it's not merited. I'd like to see Floyd help us figure that out.
Cool. So how did you personally get involved in boxing in the first place?
Listen, you need to ask that question, to be honest with you. Yes.
Skills.
supplemented through shoots. So I see kids that become better kids, better students, because of the confidence they learn from boxing that they didn't get from other places in life that's available to them by getting into a gym, getting direction, getting discipline, and finding out they can depend on themselves. It's a magical place. You find out things about yourself that there's not many places in this world that can take you on that kind of journey to give you that information. Some kids need to know they count, and they don't find out at home. They don't find out on the football field. They don't find out on the basketball court because there's so many people involved. But in the setting of a gym, there's a coach and there's you, and there's another person you can be against. And you're able to get a defined idea of what you can actually push yourself to do and what you can demand of yourself. And you get to face things that most people never get put in a position to face. You get to face inhibitions that are always there, insecurities that are always laying around somewhere, that now you get to clear them out. Now you get to deal with them. Now you get to sort them out. And it serves people for the rest of their lives. They don't have to go on to become world champs or world champions. But by just going through the process of facing yourself, facing your own demons, facing your own fears, facing your own inhibition, finding out that some idiot 20 years ago who said you were never going to make it, you were never reliable, you were never tough, and you were never strong, and you were never any of those things, you find out that that wasn't true. That you are accountable, you are strong, you are tough. You do have substance because you can climb up those steps, you can get in the ring, you can be nervous as hell, your legs can be shaking, but you can go out there and behave like the kind of person that you want to be. That's a magical thing that a sport can offer you, that experience that a sport can take you through. And that's why politicians and other people that are supposed to, from a social standpoint, are supposed to be our directors and our leaders, they should understand that a lot of kids that are brought up in places where they don't get the help that they need, that don't get the direction they need, that don't get the resources that can help develop them into the kind of kids that we'd like everyone to be developed into. They should understand that boxing gyms can help do that, that the millions of dollars they spend on other programs that sometimes are not effective. They might be well-meaning, but they're not effective. That a boxing gym can serve a child in these kinds of areas better than most programs. They really can. They can nurture a kid. People say, well, it's violent. It's that. What's not violent in our world nowadays? Tell me what's not violent in our world. Tell us what's not threatening in this world. Tell us what's not dangerous in this world. It teaches you to use yourself, not to use violence, but to use yourself, to depend on yourself, to control yourself. You show me a kid who just goes in there hanging, I'll tell you a kid that lasts for about 2 days, and he's not in the gym anymore until he learns not to be angry.
Yeah, to help kids that have trouble, one of the things that I grew up with was the trend of, every insult somebody throws at you, they come back with your mother, and I lost my mother when I was young, so that always used to make me fight. But getting off the street fights, boxing was the only thing that helped me do that. Become a productive kid, so I definitely feel you there and hear what you're saying. But as far as the sport, a lot of people are saying that boxing is dying. What do you say to those people?
Boxing has died a million times, and there must be truth to reincarnation then, because it's come back a million times. So I say to those people, tell me something I haven't heard already. Boxing can be better protected, it can be better marketing, it can be better organized, it can be better by its own people. The administrators of boxing, to a certain extent, have shortcomings, and some of them are really selfish. But the sport is still beautiful when it's done right, when it's administered right. It's the people that administrate it that have problems. You know, there's too many separate talent brokers that just think about themselves and what they can get out of boxing, but nothing else. It doesn't have one central commission like the other major sports that makes sure that the sport, that foot is put forward, to make sure the sport is marketed, make sure that the sport has standards that are adhered to, laws that are abided by, enforcements that are enforced. It doesn't have a national commission to do that. It just has these different promoters. A lot of the promoters are devoid of character. They are. They're devoid of character. They're corrupt people. A lot of them. Not all of them. And, you know, they're in a landscape that allows them to behave that way and rewards them for that behavior. And so they go forward. They take care of their own little fiefdoms, their own little domains, but they don't give anything back to the sport. They don't look across the board at the inequities of the sport, the inequalities that need to be thought about for other people in the sport. And there's none of these things put in place. There's no pension. There's a fighter set on the floor and now falling on tougher times. There's not even proper medical benefits, any of those things. So, again, the sport's been around longer than any other sport. Any other sport. And yet it's never been formed in those areas. And I wish it would be. I wish it could be. I wish there were simple things like scholarships for kids coming out of high school that want to go to college, that involve boxing, that they can get a scholarship to go to school. They might not go on to boxing after 1 year. Fine, fine. I mean, it's okay. But they go on to a college degree. And to what that leads them to. I mean, kids are going on to play football, baseball, basketball, golf, swimming, all these things. They get a chance to go to school, to college with a scholarship. Why should that not be so for boxing? It used to be years ago, but again, there's nobody tending to the store. There's nobody walking the watchtower that's looking out for those things. I wish there was. I fought for that. I advocated for that. I used my forum on ESPN for the last 14 years to try to do that. But after a while, you know, your voice gets hoarse. And you get nobody to help in those areas. After a while, you say, well, you know, what are you going to do? Senator Sal McCain, I went down and I interviewed him 10 years ago down in Washington in his office, in the Senate office, about getting the National Commission together and doing some of these things. And he cared about it. He was serious about it, but it never got to the House or the Senate or wherever it had to get to, and it never got to the point that it needed to get to, and then he had bigger fish to fry later on. And he was running for the presidency, so it kind of went away. But those are the problems and the, you know, inequities of the sport. You look at the De La Hoyas and you look at those guys and the Pacquiao's and the guys that the kings of the sport that have benefited from, you know, the riches of the sport, and that's good. But then there's a big drop off, and there's no middle class, and then you drop down to the guys that are, you know, fight for $1,000, $3,000, $5,000, hoping that they can get a fight for $10,000. And, you know, there's no balance, you know, there's no, across the board, there's no evenness. I know there's always going to be the better guys and the lesser guys, but there should be an in-between. There should be more for fighters, and there's not. going to put them in with guys, get them to 17-0, 20-0, and they get paid. And the fighter doesn't develop sometimes. So when it gets to that point, he's not developed the way he should be. And along the way, you lose a little interest from the fans because they don't want to watch him fighting non-competitive fights to that extent. MMA is doing really well, they say. Well, part of the reason they're doing well is their marketing is good. Their philosophy is good. They put competitive fights on a pretty regular basis. They don't have to be the most marquee names, but they're guys that you know is going to be a competitive fight. And back in the 80s, when boxing was doing very well, the 70s and the 80s, of course, there was network television involved that brought you into the living rooms on Sundays and Saturdays. That was a great help. That's not around anymore. But you had the best guys fighting the best guys. And people were intrigued by that. You know, people were attached to that. They were committed to that. They would watch that. And again, you don't have that anymore. And those, you know, that obviously affects the position of the sport, the facts, you know, the level of the sport and how the sport is looked at by the fans.
Well, now, what do you think about this MMA fighter, Nick Diaz, coming over to boxing now, and some of these football players talking about boxing?
Well, the football players in MMA, they're not going to become champions because the MMA guys are tough guys that get all the respect in the world. But most of their effectiveness is on the mat with the grappling. Most of their boxing skills are a little rough around the edges. Most of them are not at the C+, B- level of a fighter. Most of them, you know, we love to see them standing on their feet and slug, but most of it is slugging. It's not very sophisticated boxing. Most of them are many guys. You know, most of them, you know, they do what they do on their standing on their feet at that level, and they get away with it to the point that they have guys in front of them at the same level. But it's not at the level of a, like I said, a C+ fighter. It's not where they separate themselves from. It's where they get you on the floor. And that tough set of a guns. There's no doubt about that. But they're not going to become champions in a way where they can't use their feet for the most part and get you on the floor. For the most part, they're not going to be up to the level of the top guys in the ring that do that. And the same thing for the football players. The physicality is not going to manifest itself from the football field to the boxing ring. Those are different skill sets and different mindsets and different experiences where they have to control themselves in a different environment. And the environment that they're not able to control themselves with the developed fighters, with the experienced fighters. You never see a football player get past a certain point, and there's a reason why. It's not because they don't have physical abilities, but they don't have the experience. They haven't developed skill sets in this particular arena, and the mindset in this particular arena.
Now, what would you say is your favorite or the most exciting fight that you've ever gotten a chance to call over the years?
Oh, there's been a lot of them. You know what? There's been so many of them. There's been Mickey Ward fights. Mickey Ward fought a bunch of fights on our end. There's been so many warriors that I've had the pleasure and the privilege of calling their fights. I it wouldn't be fair to, right now, just to, I have to sit down and revisit my memory. I have to look at a list and say, oh, this one, I forgot about him. But, we've had a lot of bad fights, but we've had a lot of good fights, and we've had some great fights, too.
And who do you think out there is going to be the next pound for pound guy after Manny Pacquiao kind of fades off or retires and Floyd is no longer fighting? Next best prospect.
I think that Bola has great skills. I mean, I love his skills. I didn't think he's
Cancer treatment, we pay for it, and we identify and we make sure it's
and we act on it. So they don't have to lose more than they've lost already. They don't have to lose their five. They don't have to lose their ten. They get the help for that long tool to be robbing feet of files and files and papers and papers and waiting to unlock. They need the help today. Get them to them. Find out that it's real and get them the help. And, you know, we the family that needs a handicap grant for their 8-year-old child, that's an infant. They have cerebral palsy, has muscular dystrophy. They need a ramp to get into the home, but insurance doesn't pay for it. We put the ramp up. We put 4 ramps up. I even liked that in the last 2 weeks. You have a family that needs to fly out of state to a treatment program for their child. That's stuck for 5 years. And of course, they don't have the money to do it. The insurance doesn't pay for it. They got to be put up in a hotel, too. To find out if they're eligible for the program for 4 days or 5 days, we do it. We send them out there, we take care of it. They need a wheelchair, we buy the wheelchair. They need a machine that circulates the blood to the young kids' legs. At the insurance doesn't pay for it, we pay for it. Whatever the needs are, we have a full pantry that feeds 300 families a week. We have 2 bathroom zones. They get kids often, one in Brooklyn, one in Staten Island, very difficult areas, but there's a lot of need, there's a lot of problems. And we get kids off the street, we have 250 kids between those 2 gyms. They have off the street, we have a computer program, a learning center in the gyms, where the kids have to go to the computer program with volunteers that battle them, 2 of them, once a week. In order to come to the gyms, they have to fill their report cards. They have to approve their report cards. Otherwise, they can't come to the gym. Like I said, right now, with the 250, we've got 250 kids that might have been lost in the streets and they're doing better in school. They're doing good in the rank, but they're doing better in school and they're doing better at home. And, you know, this is, we started this 14 years ago. We've given away anywhere between $3-4 million. But I feel good about it that it's pure money. No administrative cost. We have 1 paid employee. And we only started doing that when we had to about 3.5 years ago. We have an office. Other than that, every cent. And like I said, for the first 10 years, there were no administrative costs, not even a penny. But it's very minimal. And every cent goes to the cases, goes to Red Creek. To where it's supposed to be going, to where the needs are. We get 100 cases out of the year that are referred to us by muscular dystrophy, lots of times. American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, and they're good organizations, but most of their money, 80% of their money goes to administrative costs. 2-4% goes to research. These people, research is not part of their life. Right now, these people need the machine, they need the wheelchair, they need the ramp, they need the handicap ramp, and they need the medicine. We're paying right now probably for 2 dozen children's cancer medications that the insurance doesn't pay for. And so we take care of it. That's what these people that we're dealing with, that's what they need. And these big organizations, that they're able to accommodate those needs. The people will go to these organizations to ask for the help, and they'll be told, we don't do that. We can't get to the machine. We can't pay for the medicine. You know, we can't fly your family to a treatment program. And they actually call the Dr. Adams Foundation. And, you know, I get frustrated sometimes. I get scared sometimes. I get worried that, the need gets greater. And sometimes the help doesn't get greater. You know, that comes in. We run a big dinner for a fundraiser. We run a golf outing. We run a boxing event. We also get donations. But sometimes I get nervous that we keep this up. You know, because I don't want to one day not be able to answer these calls and answer these requests from these people that for the last 14 years have been able to, you know, get help. We also have scholarships where we give out scholarships for kids that have no financial way of getting to college, but they do have the incentive to get to college.
We can do to help and put some word out about your causes and